From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. In the wake of tragedies like the shooting in Newtown, Connecticut, some Americans were calling on the country's leaders to do something. Mostly what they meant was do something about what they believe are permissive gun laws. And naturally, that led to a reaction from supporters of gun rights and the concern that this backlash would restrict those rights or even take them away. Here in Utah, we've heard the same debate, but there aren't any efforts by lawmakers to restrict access to guns. In fact, there are efforts that are going the other way. There are a number of bills making their way through the system that, in fact, would loosen restrictions on guns. And today in the program, we're talking about them. We're hoping to hear from you today on this question. If you're trying to stop gun violence, do you limit gun rights or do you go the other way and expand them? Join us after the news. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about the Utah part in this debate over guns in this country. At a time when there are efforts to limit the availability of certain firearms, some Utah lawmakers are proposing to loosen restrictions on guns. On Utah's Capitol Hill, there are a number of bills making their way through the system that, in fact, would loosen restrictions on guns. Today in the program, we're talking about them, and we're hoping to hear from you today on this question. If you're trying to stop gun violence, do you limit gun rights or do you go the other way? Do you expand them? 801-585-WEST is the number, 801-585-9378. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. David Montero is joining us first. He's a reporter for the Salt Lake Tribune. He has been following the gun bills throughout the legislative session. He's joining us by phone from the Utah Capitol. And David Montero, welcome. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
I guess first question, is this an unusual year in the sense that there are a number of gun bills up here? I mean, they crop up from time to time in legislative sessions. Is this year any different?
Yeah, I think so. I think that it's but it's all contextual, of course. In light of the Newtown shooting, Aurora shootings, I think that, and then with the pushes with Obama and Biden and this administration trying to get what they want done, I think that this is highlighted.
David, are you there? Sounds like we might have lost. Oh, sorry. There was a little niche there, and I wondered if we had you'd been cut off. So in essence, what we're seeing then is a kind of ideological reaction to efforts by the Obama administration, the conversation generally to tighten restrictions on guns. This is a kind of reaction to all that.
Yes, there's a genuine fear, it seems like, amongst some gun owners that the guns are going to be restricted or taken away, and you really are fearful. And so you get Representative Green, for example, who wants to make Utah firearms law supreme over the federal government because he's fearful and his constituents are fearful that that will happen. So, yes, of course, as a reaction to this. Other bills like Paul Ray's disorderly conduct bill, that was in the session last year. So it would be hard to say that was actually a reaction to what's going on now.
Right. Let's talk about Representative Green's bill. This is Representative Brian Green. He's a Republican from Pleasant Grove. And the idea of this bill, HB 114, is to essentially bar the federal law related to gun rights, or sorry, gun restrictions from being enforced in Utah. Sort of lay that out for us, if you would.
So the law would be, federal gun laws would not apply in Utah. Utah's gun laws would be the ones that would be followed. And any attempt by the federal government to trump that, and the great controversy about this bill was just that it actually would allow sheriffs to engage in arresting or at least charging federal agents from trying to seize those weapons.
There's been some concern, as I understand it, about whether or not something like this would be constitutional. What are the legislative attorneys saying about all of that?
Well, and that was one of the things that was met with some amusement, I think, by with some, but the constitutional note on that bill was actually longer than the actual bill itself. And I think that there are obviously supremacy clause issues and commerce clause issues that were raised in the constitutional note. That bill is actually stuck in committee right now, and there is some conversation that it's having trouble getting out of that committee. So all the gun bills have, so far, for the most part, gotten out of committee pretty cleanly. This bill seems to be mired in some concerns. I think the constitutional note is an issue for some.
Do you think this particular bill will eventually make it this year?
You know, it's hard to say. There's 22 states that have some variation of this bill going through their legislature right now. Wyoming is the only one that I'm aware of that actually got it out of a committee and got it to the House floor. So it's a bill that it's a theme that seems to have trouble getting far. So the question, if it gets far in Utah here, that's still an open question. But I will say that of all the bills that have been introduced, it's the one that's lagging behind right now. The other ones are already going to the floor as early as maybe this week.
Yeah. Let's talk about Vernal Representative John Mathis's bill. It's been getting some attention because, again, in a time when there's talk about tightening restrictions on guns, this bill, in fact, loosens them. It's being called the Constitutional Carry Bill. It would allow Utahns to carry a concealed weapon, David Montero, essentially without a permit, I guess.
That's correct. If you are of legal age to purchase a gun, you would be able to carry concealed without a permit. That's why it's actually a constitutional carry, because in that way you are, the Second Amendment is what is dictating or driving your ability to carry a weapon, and concealed or not concealed is not an issue as far as the Second Amendment is concerned.
I wondered about Representative Mathis' motives on all of this. I mean, he's talking about the fact that he said he's simply trying to allow gun owners the right to do what he's called mundane things. He mentions putting on a raincoat over an openly carried weapon in a storm, for example. He mentions being on a horse. So he talks about it being this really pragmatic sort of thing. And I wondered if you think, is he being coy about that at all, if you can tell? Or is he being ideological? Is this practical, or is this, again, something that he's thinking about as a response to what's going on nationally?
You know, it's hard to ascribe motives. Yeah. I mean, I heard the same things you heard in the committee, and, you know, if you were just listening to what he said, then, of course, it sounds like he's doing it for the only reason of convenience, that, you know, your raincoat may inadvertently open up and, you know, or cover, and you'd be in violation, and it's an issue of convenience. But, you know, as I brought up in committee, too, you know, there were several hundred people denied concealed weapon permits last year that would be able to get a gun under this law, because you could go to a gun show and buy the gun without any kind of background check, and you could carry concealed without a permit. And so there's the back end of it, which is, you know, maybe a lot of people that wouldn't be able to get gun or concealed weapons otherwise or carry concealed would suddenly be able to. And he didn't really address that very much. And so I don't know whether he was, you know, pleading ignorance on it or just didn't want to talk about that part. But that is clearly an issue that those that are opposed to this measure were bringing up.
I want to ask you about what you're hearing from Governor Gary Herbert. What is he – he has said – in fact, let me play a clip. This is from his news conference. This was just last week, February 25th. And in it, he gives some sense of what he's thinking about in terms of the laws that are being – the bills, rather, that are being proposed this year. Here's Governor Herbert speaking last week.
I am a concealed weapon permit holder myself and have been for a number of years. That being said, we've got laws on the books that have served us well. Our concealed weapon permit statute has been on the books for many, many years and has served us well. In fact, other states like what we do in Utah and have tried to either copy or come here to get a concealed weapon permit from Utah because it's accepted in many, many other states. So kind of the old adage, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, comes to my mind.
That was the governor speaking at his KUED news conference, his monthly news conference. So does that give you any sense, David Montero, about whether or not he's actively negotiating to get lawmakers to change their minds, or is he thinking about a veto? I mean, we've asked the governor's office. They say they haven't made a decision about that. But what are you getting from the governor's office about all of this?
Well, I mean, I've heard the same things you've heard, and I think that, you know, if you were a lawmaker on the Hill and you heard those comments, I think you could interpret them in a fashion that, you know, he thinks that things are okay the way they are, maybe a law isn't needed. That said, I don't know that the governor is necessarily going to veto it either. I think it's 6 states have constitutional carry on their books right now. So mm-hmm. Utah would, I think, be the 7th. And I think that there's probably people that would lobby Governor Hooker to try and not veto that. So it's hard to know where that would end up happening. But as Speaker Lockhart has said, that bill hasn't even gone to debate on the floor yet. It still has a ways to go. And, has to go through the Senate as well. And the Senate obviously tends to be a little more cautious on these things as well. So it's a long way from the governor's desk at this point.
That's David Montero. He is a reporter for the Salt Lake Tribune. He covers politics. He's the firearms reporter, in fact, for them. Joined us by phone today from the Utah Capitol. David Montero, thanks very much for the time.
Sure, no problem.
801-585-WEST is the number to join the conversation. 801-585-WEST, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. We'll take a brief break. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we are talking about the debate over guns and how it's playing out in Utah. Here in Utah, there are a number of efforts by lawmakers who have introduced bills related to guns. We're talking about them. We invite you to join us. 801-585-WEST is the number. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Joining us now on the line is Paul Ray. He's the Republican representing Clearfield's District 13 in the Utah House of Representatives. He is the sponsor of House Bill 268. That bill clarifies that simply carrying a gun in public cannot be grounds for a disorderly conduct charge. Joining us by phone from the Utah House, and Representative Ray, welcome. Thanks very much for being with us.
Hey, thank you for having me on.
I guess let me begin by asking, what is the problem that you're seeing, that you're trying to address, that you're trying to resolve with your bill?
It's a problem we've actually had for a few years. But you have citizens who are legally carrying a firearm, who are not acting in any kind of a threatening manner, and they're getting tickets for disorderly conduct just for the fact that they have a gun. And so that's what we're trying to address.
So lawmakers are coming up to them and simply – so I'm trying to get a sense of the scenario. So it's in a public space.
Let me give you a scenario that happened last year during session while we were debating the same bill.
Great.
Manager at Walmart American Fork. He's going to go target shooting. His friend meets him in the back parking lot at Walmart. They're transferring their guns from his car to his friend's car.
Right.
A lady sees them. She starts circling. They realize that she's not comfortable, so they actually leave the area. They go over to a church parking lot and finish. She calls the police. They arrive. They write him a disorderly conduct ticket.
So what you're worried about is just people perceiving just the act itself of carrying a gun shouldn't be considered, threatening or?
Well, yeah, it shouldn't be disorderly conduct.
Right.
If I can legally possess a gun and I happen to reach for my wallet in the store and you can see my concealed weapon, is that disorderly conduct?
Your bill, I want to talk about the particulars as we go, but I'm interested in how you were thinking about all of this. Is your bill at all a reaction to what's going on nationally? Did you start thinking about this in different ways because of the national debate over gun violence and restrictions that might be imposed on guns?
This bill actually started 2 years ago,
huh.
And we've been trying to work a happy medium, which I don't think we're ever going to get to. So it's really not a reaction to what's been recently happening. It's just a reaction to Utah citizens unrightfully being written tickets.
What message do you think a bill like this sends at a time when the country is trying to figure out, the proper parameters of gun rights and gun restrictions? Do you worry about that, that when the country's thinking about what we need to do to maybe restrict guns or certainly think about gun laws in different ways, that the Utah legislature, your bill among them, is loosening gun laws? How are you thinking about all of that?
Well, first of all, this bill is not a gun bill. It's a disorderly conduct bill. And it's not loosening any gun restrictions. Then these are things you can currently do. We're just saying you have a right. You're following the law. There's no reason to get a ticket for that.
Right.
That's all we're saying. And this law, I don't know if you've read it, but it actually helps law enforcement. It draws the line. you had the individual in Riverdale that took the AR-15 across his shoulder into JCPenney. Under this bill, he could be cited for disorderly conduct because it says the mere carrying or possession of a holstered or encased firearm, whether visible or concealed. So these assault rifles are now going to need to be encased if they decide they're going to take it out in public like that. They just can't sling it over their shoulder. So this actually gives a little bit better control to law enforcement for the guy that takes the assault weapon into a mall.
Do you think what do you think is the natural reaction by the, you know, mainstream Utah person to seeing someone who's got a gun, you know, wandering around, you know, City Creek, for example? What do you think the natural reaction is, or should be, I guess?
Well, it depends what kind of gun. I mean, if he's got a holstered pistol, I'm not sure the reaction is going to be very great. I mean, if a guy's got an assault weapon slung over his shoulder, there should be concern. And, you know, and I'm a very, obviously very pro-gun. I'm a concealed weapons permit holder. I carry. I would be concerned if somebody walked in with an assault weapon. I think that's a natural cause.
Right.
But when I see somebody carrying something holstered, I don't think twice about it.
So you think someone who's carrying an assault weapon, they should have some restriction on their ability to move around and have this thing with them?
Well, they should be responsible with it, and it's not responsible just to sling it over your shoulder and go shopping. You know, if you need to take it out in public, it should be encased.
You know, it's interesting. Representative John Mathis, the rural lawmaker I mentioned earlier, is trying to loosen the restrictions on concealed weapons. He said he was disturbed by the people who showed up on Capitol Hill with guns. I mean, particularly as you were talking about these automatic rifles. He was quoted in the Salt Lake Tribune as saying, "I was really sickened by those people carrying in the open." He said, "I don't think they understand what we're trying to do at all." Do you have the same concern?
You know, I think all of us do. You know, you don't. A gun to me is not a political statement. You know, it's a sacred right that we have, and it needs to be done responsibly. And by bringing a Ruger automatic rifle, semi-automatic rifle, into a committee hearing, that's not responsible, and that should not be done.
I'm not sure how comfortable you feel speaking more broadly on the issue of gun rights. I know you want to talk about the particulars of your bill, but I just wanted to ask you a question or two about sort of the broader question, I guess. What do you make of Representative Mathis's bill, for example? Do you think you're going to vote for that?
Oh, I will certainly vote for it. I mean, again, it's a constitutional right to carry. And, you know, the funny thing is we kind of have it backwards here in Utah. We require a permit to conceal a weapon, but anybody can carry one in the open. You know, we just need to look at this and say what really makes sense. And the thing about his bill, I mean, really, the permit process, I'm not sure how good it really is. I mean, it's obviously beneficial. I'll keep mine regardless because of the reciprocity with other states, so I can carry when I travel. But when a person buys a gun, they're already getting their background checks. You know, I mean, so we're doing due diligence on that end. And I think that's the important part. And to say that, hey, if you want to carry and you're not a restricted person, you ought to be able to carry. You know, that works fine because I got to tell you, a permit doesn't stop a restricted person from carrying. If a convicted felon's going to carry, he knows already that he can't get a permit. And he's going to carry it anyway illegally. So I'm not sure that the permit is really as vital as people seem to think it is, because criminals don't abide by the law. That's why they're in trouble all the time.
Hmm.
And the people that do are the law-abiding citizens that are usually being penalized because they've got to jump through the hoops because of the criminals who never will jump through the hoops. And so I support what Representative Mathis is doing.
It's interesting though. Representative Mathis mentioned last week in the Judiciary Committee hearing that in some ways he was more comfortable with a weapon that was concealed then out in the open. Let me play just a snippet here from there's a sort of a question and answer period. You'll also hear the vice chair of the Judiciary Committee, Representative Lee Perry, from last week.
We have legally open carry in the state of Utah today. Personally, I'm far more comfortable if a gun is covered than if it's carried out in the open. If you don't have a concealed carry permit and you're carrying in the open, it's against the law to put a jacket on. I, for one, am far more comfortable if that firearm is covered, personally. That's my preference, and that's what I'm trying to accomplish, is allow us to put a jacket on, a slicker on if we're fishing or moving cows, a jacket if we're in town.
That's what I'm trying to accomplish. The general public who might see somebody carrying openly more comfortable.
I think it does. Yeah.
Okay.
What do you think about that?
I think that's a fair assessment.
Yeah. So people who feel, you know, weird about guns, though. I mean, what he's saying is he'd rather people just keep them hidden as opposed to carrying them around in the open.
And I feel the same way. I would rather they be concealed than in the open. And the thing is the way our law currently is, like he said, it penalizes the guy that maybe doesn't have a permit who open carries and puts a jacket on. Now all of a sudden he's breaking the law.
Right.
But he is trying to be more responsible. So, you know, I think under Representative Mathis's bill, I think you'll see a lot of people that currently open carry may start concealing just because now they don't have to pay the money and keep up with the whole processes of a permit.
So what is your message for people who have the right to open carry? You're saying be responsible.
Don't carry for a political statement. Be responsible with what you do and how you do it. You know, and that's the same with your First Amendment rights, your Fourth Amendment rights, you know, whatever. Be responsible with them.
What are you hearing from the governor's office about not just your bill, but bills in general? He seemed to indicate last week that the laws were fine where they are.
You know, and that's all I've heard from his office. I've not had any personal discussions with the governor.
So there's no lobbying going on for you guys to cool it up there or something?
I think my bill is probably one of the least controversial because it actually makes it better. You know, it draws the line on assault weapons and going shopping with your gun, basically. So I think the Leagues of Cities and Towns and the mayors don't like it because they want to be able to require somebody to talk to law enforcement when it's unconstitutional without probable cause. And I can't do that because it's unconstitutional. And I don't think the mayors understand. I hope the public, when they go to the mayor elections this year, will ask their mayor where they stood in these bills and where the mayor is in gun rights, because I got to tell you, I'm seeing a lot of mayors up here that are very, very anti-gun, and a lot of cities are trying to use this this clause here as far as the disorderly conduct to try to control guns, and it's not right. It's not fair to the public.
That's Paul Ray. He represents Clearfield's District 13 in the Utah House of Representatives. He joined us there from the Utah House by phone today. And Representative Ray, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
801-585-WEST, the number to join the conversation, 801-585-9378. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Let's go to the phones. Is it Giggy in Salt Lake? Oh, sorry. Is it Giggy?
It's Giggy.
Yes. Welcome. Thanks very much.
Hey, Doug. I love your show.
Thank you.
I'm speaking as a mom. I'm speaking as a gun owner. And I'm speaking as somebody who has survived gun violence and domestic violence. I think if you are carrying a concealed weapon, if you're carrying a weapon and you have it covered, it's a concealed weapon. And I think that, you know, when you do these background checks, you are doing one more little thing that we can do to protect our kids. I don't want my kids going to the mall and seeing somebody carrying a gun. That's just, it's not right. It's not right, especially in this day and age when kids are traumatized and have anxiety from what they've been witnessing. If it's concealed, it needs to be concealed. I don't understand why a hairdresser has to have hundreds and hundreds of hours documented in order to be a hairdresser, but a gun, which is life-threatening, doesn't need any documentation now with what they're trying to do to lessen the laws. So I'll take my comment off here. Thanks.
Thanks very much. Giggy, you still with us? I wanted to ask you something else.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you saying you'd rather just not know about it? If you've got a gun, keep it hidden.
No, I think they should have a background check and a concealer's permit.
Yeah. I mean, they should go through the permitting process, but you would rather them go through all that process and then hide the thing as opposed to have it out in the open?
I have three daughters, and I have a gun. I think there's a need for hunting. I think there's a need for protection. I think guns are needed, especially in this day and age. However, when my kids see a gun at the mall on somebody, they get nervous.
Yeah.
Because what are we going to do? As soon as, you know, if somebody can carry a gun, they're fine still until they start pulling the trigger. So I just don't think that people should be carrying guns unless they have a permit to carry a concealed weapon.
Okay. Gigi, thanks very much.
Thank you.
801. Thank you. 801-585-WEST, the number to join us. Mark is with us in Salt Lake. Mark, welcome.
Hi there. These gun rights advocates, their basic argument is if we had more guns and if more people had them, they could address public safety and there would be less crime and less mass shootings. If 300 million guns in America isn't enough to do the job now, how many more do we need in the public before these guys say, okay, now we have enough guns and now the crime rate will drop as a consequence of having more guns? Because if that argument is really true, why aren't all the criminals going to Europe where they don't have very many guns and where they can shoot up everybody and not worry about concealed weapons? And the other question I have is this politician arguing about, well, we need to have more gun rights and concealed weapons rights, et cetera, as if this is an absolute constitutional right. And then he turns around and says, oh, yeah, and then we're going to have a limitation of, you know, crazy people can't do this and ex-cons can't do this. Well, if the right to own a gun is absolute in the Constitution, these guys are violating the Constitution by requiring background checks on criminals, and they're violating it by not letting us carry guns in courthouses and making us put them in cases and not letting us carry guns into banks. At what point, I mean, you know, they can't have their cake and eat it too. They can't say it's absolute and then say, oh, but here's the sensible part and we'll restrict it from ex-cons. Because if it's absolute, then ex-cons should be able to have a gun and crazy people and anybody and everywhere.
Yeah. That absolute question I'm going to put to someone we have on the program coming up here in a few minutes. So, Mark, hold tight. That other question about enough guns, it's Marianne Martindale is with us, the executive director for the nonprofit advocacy group Alliance for a Better Utah. She's written in opposition to the gun bills making their way through the legislative session this year, particularly John Mathis's bill, which we've been talking about. First of all, welcome. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So to the question, you're not the one to respond to when is enough guns enough, but to the broader point that he's making, surely you're hearing that. And what are you making of the way the argument is playing out, not just in Utah, but what are you hearing so far?
It's been really interesting to watch it, you know, and to see the people that have come out in support of the guns. I don't know that necessarily they've been the people that the sponsors of the bills have been as happy to see at these committee hearings as some of their other supporters in the past.
What do you mean?
You know, they're the people that are bringing a rifle slung over their shoulder.
So you're seeing a lot of that
up there. A lot of that, yeah. A lot more than what we've seen in the past. There's a lot more energy around this. There's a lot more fear, almost. It's a strange undercurrent, and I can't explain it because we haven't had this type of gun bills up here before. You know, as Representative Ray said, we've had his bill for the last 2 years, and it's just sort of been plodding its way through, as sometimes bills do, as they rework and refine. But this year it's different. There's a different sense about it, and there are people who are, you know, that – when you can have my gun when you take it from my cold, dead hand sort of sense. And then you have people who are very afraid of this mentality and this approach.
So you get a sense that people like Representative Ray, people like Representative Mathis, these guys are not doing them any favors.
I don't think so, no.
What do you make of John Mathis's bill? I mean, it's interesting because on one hand, he just seems like a good old boy who wants to put on a slicker and go out and go fishing and, you know, mend a fence. And and why can't I just let it fold over my gun here in my holster?
Right.
That's what he's talking about. Or that's what he says. He says it has nothing to do with the big ideological battle. It's not a response to President Obama. It's not that. It's just a simple pragmatic thing. But then it's hard to sort of see the timing. And as David Montero said earlier, it's hard to ascribe motive. I won't ask you but what do you think?
Exactly. And I fall the same way as Dave Montero does. You know, it really is hard to know. Representative Mathis has never been someone who's particularly been on the edge in terms of his bills. He sort of flies under the radar. Hmm. Very nice man. Very, you know, soft-spoken. I don't think that he saw this coming. I'm not sure that he anticipated the response that he's had. And people should be concerned about this bill. It's a scary bill. It's opening things up that we shouldn't be opening up.
And you don't think he intended? There's some unintended consequences.
I think that perhaps he had a narrower view of what it was going to do. I mean, I do think that he is, you know, the vernal veterinarian who rides his horse out on the range and wants to be able to pull his rain slicker over. I mean, when he said that story, it felt very authentic. Yeah. And I think that, you know, I also think that there's not a whole police force out on the range that are policing whether or not. I'm not advocating someone breaking the law, but I'm not sure that that's exactly the place where this is really the problem.
801-585-WEST, again, the number two, join the conversation. Let's go back to the phones. Linda is with us in Salt Lake. Linda, welcome.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Hi, Doug. I just wanted to comment on both of these bills that they're discussing. In order for the fear of the federal government coming and confiscating guns is so outlandish, and it's the number one issue that the NRA has put out to its members and to gun owners for years and years and years. And in order for the federal government or anyone to confiscate the guns of law-abiding citizens and law-abiding gun owners, you'd have to rescind. You'd have to have a vote of every state in the country to rescind the Second Amendment. It is unconstitutional. They're not going to do it, and it is just a false fear that the NRA is imposing on this country to fear the government. And that why would they confiscate the guns? Well, you know, the argument there is, you know, well, if they can confiscate the guns, then they can turn the government over to a tyrannical power or to the UN.
Yeah.
These are all those kinds of arguments. And then the idea that any state that their state laws has precedent over the federal laws, again, is blatantly unconstitutional. And both bills are that way. You can't do away with background checks in Utah when the federal government requires them. And so hopefully both of these bills will fail, or at least the governor won't sign them.
Let me get a reaction from Marianne Martindale. The question that we're talking about, Brian Green, Representative Green's bill, 119, I guess, 114, forgive
114.
Me. 114. What are the chances for that thing? I mean, it's been held up in committee right now. Lawmakers are worried about the constitutionality.
I think they are. I think that they're really worried about it. As you know, as mentioned earlier, the constitutional note or the legislative review note was 400 words longer than the actual bill file. I mean, that's problematic. It doesn't mean that they haven't done that before. The land bills last year had lengthy constitutional notes, but there are a lot of concerns, and it's coming down on the side of concern that, you know, do we really want to get in another litigious situation? We've done that repeatedly. Can we afford that? What's coming down with the budget?
So what will they do? I think they'll hold it, frankly.
That's sort of best case scenario, that it just dies a quiet death in committee. But, you know, there's a lot of bills that have to get through that committee. They've already gone through two hearings on this. To bring it up to a third hearing and then go through all of the discussion and everything, especially where there is a lot of concern around this, I'm inclined to think they would like it to just go away, that one particularly.
Representative Mathis's bill, there doesn't seem to be a sense that that's going to go away. Does it have constitutional problems, Leslie Levation?
You know, there's not nearly the note on that. It's less concerning with regards to the Constitution. It's problematic in that it would immediately, once it became law, would allow all of these people who up until now have been denied or have had permits revoked or permits suspended, they could carry concealed weapons. They could carry a concealed weapon with a round in the chamber. I mean, it really opens the door from what we have now. It's a really dangerous road we're heading down.
801-585-WEST, the number to join the conversation. Back to the phones. Ike with us in South Salt Lake. Ike, welcome.
Great. I just wanted to point out to all the listeners here and maybe whatever kind of legislators are listening that I own six weapons, three of which my father gave to me. He bought for me when I was young so that I could hunt. Since then, I bought three high-capacity semi-automatic pistols at the gun show. I never was ever checked for a background until I got my concealed carry permit. Why in the world would we not require every single gun owner, if we're going to require them now, in the past, to have a background check and a background check to have the weapons that they already own? And I'd take my comments off the air.
Great.
Thanks.
Mike, thanks. You want to take that?
Yeah, I think that's a really good comment. You know, just last year alone, there were over 2,000 people who were denied a concealed permit or revoked or had it suspended. I mean, we have a really high number of people, over 12,000 people since they've been keeping records, who have been either had their permit denied, had their permit revoked, or their permit suspended. This is a concealed carry permit. And he's right. You do when you purchase a gun. I'm a gun owner. When I purchased a gun, I went through a background check. But that could have been years ago. I could have purchased that gun from an individual person. There's no background checks required in those types of sales. I could have been given the gun. There's no registration transfer in those instances. So that gun, I could have never gone through a background check and I could be carrying. And if this passes, I could be carrying openly. I could be carrying concealed. I could be carrying with a round in the chamber. That's troublesome. It's just – it sounds like an accident waiting to happen.
801-585-WEST. Again, the number to join us. Let's go back to the phones. Kayla is with us in Salt Lake. Kayla, hi.
Hi.
Go ahead.
So I wanted to speak for a second about the high schooler's perspective. I actually am a high school student, and for me, what's so worrisome about these bans is that, I mean, kids my age, it's so easy to go on the Craigslist and you can find assault weapons that are incredibly dangerous and really shouldn't be handled by kids that are my age, in my personal opinion. And I just have this huge issue with how much ammo is allowed anywhere. I mean, it's scary. The ones that are fighting these bans, like, are not the ones that I'm afraid of. It's the people who will go onto Craigslist, and it's the people that have such easy access. And you're not required to get a permit if you buy these things online. I mean, there just needs to be some rule set down so the kids my age can't get them.
You worried about that too?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, it opens the door completely. I mean, when we have these online sales like this without any type of background check, you know, we're very supportive of universal background checks for that very reason. Who knows who's buying that weapon? We went to a gun show just a couple of months ago, and in line, as we were waiting to get in the door, there were easily 12 to 15 people who were selling weapons. If we had cash in our pocket, we could have walked out the door. There was never a transfer. There's never a background check, nothing. And these were AR-15s. These were various assault weapons. It's troublesome.
What are you hearing there with Kayla? I mean, concerns from younger people.
Well, it's encouraging. I mean, it's nice to see that they recognize that there should be a concern about this. You know, there's all this talk about the Second Amendment and that it just has this unrestricted, unfettered access to guns. But it's not true. In 2008, the last time that we had a Supreme Court decision, which was D.C. versus Heller. Thank you.
One.
That's a hard word to say.
Yeah.
Which is where most point to. That's where it identifies that you have an individual right to carry.
Yeah.
But Scalia specifically said, so Justice Scalia wrote the opinion, like most rights, the second—
No liberal that.
No, definitely not. Like most rights, the Second Amendment right is not unlimited. It is not a right to keep and carry any weapon whatsoever in any manner whatsoever and for whatever purpose. And I think that's extremely important. And it's something that we don't hear in the discussion from the other side of this.
Do you think some gun rights advocates are worried about the question of safety? That, yes, they're also concerned about whether or not some of these restrictions are going to limit their rights, but also that the unintended consequence of a bill like Representative Mathis will be, as you said, guns going off here and there because people aren't trained. They don't have the proper, you know, lesson.
Do you think
they're worried about that?
I think that there is a lot of concern, especially among gun owners, gun supporters, but also those that really do believe that there's a safety component to gun regulation. There are a lot that aren't crazy about this. I mean, there are, you know, there's definitely supporters of this bill, but I would say that I've talked to some very reasoned but very intent gun owners that don't think this is a good idea because of that very reason. Accidental discharge is a huge issue. And the fact that you're taking that two-step process from being able to fire a weapon down to a one-step process and anyone conceivably could have that weapon, it's a recipe for disaster.
But it's one thing to whisper to you in the hallway up there and say, I'm really worried about this too. And it's another thing to go on record.
It is. And believe me, I've exhausted conversations trying to get them to go on record during these. I've spoken against several of these at committee hearings. And a lot of the more rational gun, either lobby or gun advocates, are just they're absent from the discussion because it's awkward. You know, it's their base that's sort of rallying around this, that's holding these rallies at the capitals and waving their weapons and, you know, posturing, as if you will. And so I think that it's unfortunate that we can't get them to be vocal, but I certainly understand the challenge that they're facing.
You're going to lose this session, it seems.
I think so, unfortunately. But, you know, Governor Herbert may veto it. He's not a fan of this. He said that clearly.
Well, see, it was hard to get a sense of where he was because he just said, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So I couldn't tell. Representative Ray wasn't willing to say that he'd been hearing from the governor's office to say, you guys knock it off. We're fine.
Are they doing that? Is there any lobbying going on at all?
There is. You know, it's obviously this is all sort of happens like the sausage making. It all happens behind the scenes. But, you know, we've seen this happen before. We've had 2 years in a row now where there has been a bill that has not been particularly palatable to the public. And it comes back, whether it's grandma and the governor makes the legislature overturn it, or whether it's the sex ed bill and the governor finally vetoes it. You know, maybe this is the year that he takes the gauntlet that the speaker threw down and he's actually going to veto this before we make him.
What's the chance?
50-50.
Wow. Marianne Martindale, she's the executive director for Alliance for a Better Utah. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
801-585-WEST, the number, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. We'll take another break. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about the Utah part in the debate over guns in this country. At a time when there are efforts to limit the availability of certain firearms, some Utah lawmakers are actually proposing to loosen some restrictions on guns. On Utah's Capitol Hill, there are a number of bills we've been talking about making their way through the system, and we're talking about it. 801-585-WEST is the number, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Brent Tenney is joining us now. He's a board member of the Utah Shooting Sports Council. It's a nonprofit organization which works to defend Second Amendment rights. And Mr. Tenney, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Well, let me ask you, I sort of want to get a sense of where you are on all of this. But first of all, should there be any restrictions on firearms, do you think, conceptually?
Yeah, I accept that there are some limits to every right. The right to free speech has its limits, and so does the Second Amendment.
Like what? Armor-piercing bullets?
I think that one is vaguely defined, and so no, I'd probably oppose it on armor-piercing bullets. And if I could take a second to explain that.
Sure.
Almost every rifle round, the gun you use to hunt a deer, it would be considered an armor-piercing bullet by some definitions. It penetrates Kevlar body armor because it's a rifle, and almost every rifle does. So I'd oppose banning rifle ammunition, essentially.
Yeah. But the really bad ones, the ones that are intended to go through Kevlar, not... You'd say maybe not.
Well, again, Kevlar armor stops pistol rounds and not rifle rounds, and so I'd oppose a ban on rifled rounds.
Got it. Assault rifles with multi-round magazines.
I think those are fine. I think the AR-15 is the most popular selling rifle in America, is what I've been told, and I think that's probably true, and I think people ought to be able to keep those. I don't think they're the problem. They represent a minute fraction of the gun crime in America today, so...
How are you assessing what's going on in Utah's Capitol Hill now? Again, this conversation about people up in arms about what happened in Newtown, of course, and there are any number of gun tragedies that have been mentioned, and people are saying, look, we need to do something. If not, we need to do something about gun violence. And then on Utah's Capitol Hill, you know, people are dismayed by the fact that there are laws that being proposed that go the other way, at least from their perception. What are you making of that?
First of all, I don't think that all the laws go the other way. I understand.
You don't agree with the premise necessarily.
Yeah, I understand, feel sympathy for the people that lost loved ones in Newtown and any gun tragedy in Aurora, Colorado and the rest. But some of our gun laws this year I think are being perhaps perceived as expanding gun rights, when I think the sponsor and the intent of them is perhaps even to address some of the concerns with mental health and things like that. For example, the Safe Harbor bill gives people who are going through a tough time a chance to give up their guns for a little while, to turn them in somewhere and have them held for them while they address their issues, and they can come back and collect them later. Senator Thatcher's bill on allowing the people who have once been deemed mentally ill to get cleared and receive their gun rights again is actually, I think, a great idea, because right now today there are people who are going through tough times, who are facing mental illness, who hesitate to go get help from a professional for fear that they'll lose their right to keep and bear arms. This bill gives them that assurance that, no, you can get it back again if you're diagnosed mentally ill. And can encourage people who wouldn't otherwise seek treatment to get treatment. I think that's a great idea. I think that's a worthwhile bill that addresses this issue, that isn't just about expanding gun rights, even though it's portrayed that way sometimes.
What about the issue of Representative Mathis's bill, the bill that would essentially say you don't need any permit at all to conceal a weapon?
Representative Mathis's bill, I think, has gotten I'd like to make one point about it. I think it's gotten a bad rap, and here's why. HB 76 does not change who can carry a firearm in public in any way, shape, or form. The same people that can right now today take an unconcealed firearm that's two actions away from firing in public and walk around the park, walk around the mall, those people are the only people that are affected by HB 76. It doesn't expand the right to any new class of people. It doesn't expand the ability to possess a firearm to anyone new. So I think a lot of the conversation has been on that and is maybe a misunderstanding of the bill.
I think he was making a statement or he was just making a – doing something pragmatic.
I know that we didn't bring the bill to him. My organization didn't, and I don't think any other gun rights organizations did. So I truly believe that he had this concern from a constituent and wanted to address it, and that's where it came from.
801-585-WEST, the number to join us. Let's go back to the phones. Jim is with us in Provo. Jim, sorry for the wait. Welcome.
No problem. Glad to be with you.
Go ahead.
Well, I am a professor at a university here, and I carry a gun every day in the classroom. It's legal here in Utah. I'm a former Navy pilot and an airline pilot. I carried a gun in the cockpit both places. And so I've been around guns for many, many years, and I feel very strongly that we should loosen the laws. If we loosen laws and allow more people to carry guns, it actually makes society safer. And the people that are against guns generally are ones that have not been around them or not familiar with them, so they fear them just when they had known. The statistics prove it. In fact, one of the books was written on, they did studies on it. It wasn't just most of the time it makes it safer. It's actually like 100% of the time when the guns are allowed to be carried by the citizens. Actually, violent crime goes down. When they restrict gun ownership, violent crime goes up. Always.
But what do you make of the fact that – let's take 2010 and Brian Tenney, Brent Tenney, forgive me, I want to get you on in this as well. Latest figures from the Centers for Disease Control. You've heard this, Jim, in Provo. 2010, 31,000 people killed in the United States by guns. And you look at the United Kingdom, 155 people.
Okay. Look at the violent crime rates.
Yeah.
Violent crime rates are way different.
But you're not saying that guns has anything to do with that?
The violent crime is perpetrated
access
in countries
to guns.
Where they've completely banned guns, they've confiscated them. The violent crime has gone up by as much as 60% in some places in Australia. And so the violent crime doesn't seem to be affected by whether people have guns or not.
Well, wait,
I think it's irresponsible for people not to be armed, actually, personally.
Yeah. So you don't think that access to guns has some – plays into that figure at all?
It makes it safer. If more people had guns, we'd have less crime, less violent crime, because there would be less crime committed, because the crime would be stopped with people – law-abiding citizens that did have a gun to prevent
it. Brent, where are you on that?
John Lott has a compelling argument on this and more guns, less crime. The right to carry laws reduce crime. They provide a deterrent. And I encourage you to read his book, but I find it rather compelling and convincing. So,
I wanted to ask you about the – it's interesting the – a question I asked Representative Ray was, is it a rational reaction? What is the rational reaction, I suppose, is the question, at seeing someone for a mainstream person. What's the rational reaction to seeing someone at the mall or at a restaurant or at a theater with a gun clearly in view?
I'd answer that this way. People see police officers every day with a gun in view and no one freaks out.
Right. That's a police officer, though.
Yeah, I agree.
That's not an 18-year-old kid with a gun. And there's a photo in the Tribune, which some people would find startling.
Yeah. I was at that committee hearing where the 18-year-old kid was carrying a gun.
What did you think about that?
It didn't bother me at all. It didn't upset me at all. There were about 200 people in the room, and he stood up and stood in the center aisle, and I don't think anybody, you know, cried or ran out of the room screaming. I think most of them, took it with a grain of salt and moved on with their day. I don't think it was a big deal for most of the people there. So – in answer to your question, should a rational person – how should they feel? I don't think it's a big concern for most people. It wasn't in the committee hearing at least. So
they should be okay with it?
They're free to feel how they want. I'm not going to tell them how they feel. But I don't think it's a cause for concern. I don't react negatively when I see someone carrying a gun in a holster.
How am I supposed to know we have an email here – I wish I could find it. I know the essence of it, so I'll just sort of – from Ryan, who essentially asks, how do you differentiate the good guys from the bad guys if something starts happening?
Let me give you a story. Well, if something starts happening, like the police show up?
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a lot of concern about that. Let's say the police show up. Someone's got a gun.
That's actually happened. In Pearl, Mississippi, there was a high school shooting some number of years ago. I don't remember. And the assistant principal had to run to his truck, which was parked off campus because he had a gun in there, retrieved his firearm, came back and stopped the shooter and was holding the shooter at gunpoint. The police came and arrested him. He was able to clearly communicate that, hey, I'm not the bad guy. I'm stopping the shooter here and not get shot. Certainly there's some risk and some concern. If you're a gun owner and you have a gun and want to intervene in a situation, you ought to do so cautiously and with the understanding that the police are coming in looking for someone with a gun, and you need to make it very clear that you know, follow their commands and do what they expect very quickly or you're in danger. And yeah. I think gun owners understand that and would choose to intervene or not intervene based on their comfort with that.
You've said that we're coming back from a dark time in gun rights history, and that Representative Mathis's bill and some of these others represent a kind of next wave in gun rights. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think 1994 was probably the high watermark for gun control in this country, and since then it's been on the decline. The assault weapons ban wasn't renewed. The Democrats lost control of Congress the next election after passing that assault weapons ban. And since then, more and more states have added what we call right to carry laws, the shall issue laws, where they can't deny you a permit because they don't like the way you look or the way your name sounds or something like that. The next wave comment referred to constitutional carry. There are more and more states now in the last few years that have passed constitutional carry laws like HB 76, like Mathis's bill.
Yeah.
And I see that trend is likely to continue and expand. And I expect Utah will probably be somewhere near the forefront of that trend. So
you're optimistic.
Yeah. I think from my perspective, things are heading in the right direction. And there's a bit of a divergence. Some states are sort of receding, New York and Maryland, New Jersey, places like that. But in general, I think gun rights are sort of on the march across the country.
Brent Tenney, board member of the Utah Shooting Sports Council, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
We invite you to continue the conversation. Go to our website, radiowest.kuer.org, and express your opinion. Tell us your story. Radio West, a production of KUER News. Our thanks to Taylor Almond. We have technical direction from Mike Anderson. The show produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.